Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is still Palmadot, as you know. Looking forward to this episode. I have Mike Boswell. He is VP of Training at the Aspire Group, coming to us from Atlanta, Georgia. Mike, how are things, man?
It's going well, Paul. I appreciate you having me, man. Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. Do me a favor, say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for your time. Yeah, the intro, you know, in Atlanta, we are the Aspire Group, best known in the sports field, where we help many of our partners, a lot of them in the collegiate field, help sell tickets, drive attendance, drive revenue. I've been doing a lot, Paul, as you and I spoke of, in the development side. But, you know, it's, as you know, the fun thing about sales is where it can take you. And I appreciate you inviting me here so that we can talk about some of those stories and hopefully help some others that have a desire to have a long career in this industry. Working in sports is a blast. The number of people that you make, that you meet, the relationships that you build, the lifelong friendships are phenomenal. They are anywhere, but it's unique in the sports industry. Living in Atlanta, where my wife and I just love living here. It's a wonderful city, so much to do. It's been a unique year in Atlanta as it has been everywhere else in the world, but we're surviving.
All right, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, all things considered. And we'll talk about 2020, of course, as well, throughout our conversation. And so, Mike, as you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters, and that's really built on the foundation from my chair. Nothing is really given to any of us, and we all have different paths and big decisions to make, but it all starts with what we have up top with our mindset and our intention. And so you're ready to share your story here.
Heck, why not? That's why we're here, right, Paul?
Let's get into it then. So we're going back in time here, Mike. That's what we do on this podcast. I'm going to take you back just a couple of years to the late 70s.
Just a couple of years here.
Late 70s, 79. You are graduating high school, if I have that correct.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about where you were in your life and what you were going through around, what was next for you? And, you know, what was your vision at the time, if you even had one, you know, back in your late teens?
I didn't have one. You know, Paul, I mean, I grew up in a small town of about 15,000, a college town. And there weren't many opportunities. Frankly, there still aren't a lot. You know, the economy is still bad in my hometown. So one thing I knew I wanted to do was get out. What was that vehicle going to be, right? I was about an hour or so outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So got to Pittsburgh and really didn't have much of a plan there either. You know, I worked in retail. I didn't have a career going on at all, Paul. But I answered an ad in the newspaper. It was an actual newspaper, Paul, the paper type. And the Pittsburgh, exactly. Yes. Looking at the old classified ads.
That's old school, Mike.
One thing I found about people would say it's old school. If anybody ever says I'm old school, it just means they're old. School is wrapping paper. The fact is they're old. The newspaper classified ad said the Pittsburgh Pirates were looking to hire telemarketing sales consultants. And I grew up being a big Pittsburgh Pirates fan in that part of the country. Paul, for baseball fans, I've seen Roberto Clemente play in person a handful of times. I've seen Willie Mays play. Hank Aaron, growing up as a baseball fan in that era, it was wonderful. And to work for the Pittsburgh Pirates was a dream come true. So like many of us, I stumbled across an opportunity. But as you know, and hopefully, heck, every successful person knows, we all stumble across opportunities. It's what you do with the opportunity when it comes your way, right?
And so how many years were you with the Pirates?
With the Pirates for 2 years. Approximately 2 years. And during that time, my father passed away. And the Pirates made me an offer to become a full-time employee because, again, I was an inside sales representative working part-time during that period and did very well. But when the full-time offer came, I felt it was very little money. And I bring up my father because it was the first time in my life I had a really big decision to make, and I didn't have my dad to lean on for advice. So it was difficult. I turned down the offer and became more of a free agent. So a very dear friend, Charlie Tislagi, who worked for the Pirates as well, earned some contracts, and I worked with him to really just sustain myself, stay in the industry, make some money during a difficult period. Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, we sold season tickets for their basketball program. At the time, a brand new venue, the AJ Palumbo Center. The Seattle Mariners was a real turning point for me when we went to Seattle, Charlie and I, to run an inside sales department for the Mariners. And it was a turning point in that I really started to learn leadership skills. I really helped as an assistant manager, help run a staff, help train and motivate a staff. And it was also difficult because of the distance, the first time I've been far from home. So it's not just a little bit away from home, it was far, far from home. So that was a wonderful experience. And it really gave me some roots in the industry. It helped me understand this is truly where I want to be long-term.
And so, Mike, was this late 80s, early 90s, roughly?
It was. It was. This would have been in, gosh, late 80s, 89, I think, by the time Seattle came around. Correct. Okay.
So late 80s, 89 or so. How old were you at the time?
I would have been late 20s, 27, 28.
Okay. So 27, 28. Geez, listen, condolences for losing your dad at such a young age.
Sure.
Were you the oldest? Are you the oldest child, single child?
Fourth out of five.
All right. Okay. All right. So you lose your dad at a pretty young age, and then you decide to go out west. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening can echo your sentiments around, you know, you kind of lost your rock there to bounce ideas off of. And you just know your dad has your best interest in heart and probably can kind of give you some guidance. And so you figured that out. But that must have been overly difficult at the time. Even now, if you'd lose your dad, it would be hard, right? Mm-hmm. But even in your 20s, you're still trying to figure things out.
Yeah, it magnified the light on the decision I had to make with the Pirates. It made it entirely more difficult than it had to be. You know, anytime you try to make a decision, you look at the facts, but emotions and being human come into play, and outside elements, you know, mess with the facts, and they make a decision harder to come up with. And that's what happened with me, with my dad being gone. So it ended up being a good decision, not because I turned down the Pirates. It was a great learning opportunity being in Pittsburgh. A couple things that come to mind. One is, and I've said this many times over the years, Paul, if it wasn't for the Pittsburgh Pirates being a very difficult sale at the time, I would never have had success in sales. Mm. We work in the sports industry, so I use a term a lot in training. No one builds a career off of selling LeBron. LeBron sells LeBron. So if you have a choice between selling Lakers or selling a team that doesn't usually win, take the harder job because you're going to be much better as a result. You know, anybody can grab that low hanging fruit, but when you're faced with a challenge and a product that doesn't sell itself, by necessity, you're going to become a much better salesperson. You have to be, you know, an average or below average sales technique you can get by with if the product sells itself. So that's one thing that I learned from the Pirates. You had to be good or else you weren't going to sell anything. And it's not just because the Pirates were playing poorly, which they were and still do today. The real problem, Paul, is when I was with the Pirates, the real challenge was the mascot, the Pirate Parrot, was arrested for selling cocaine to Major League Baseball players.
Oh, wow.
True story. You can't make this stuff up.
So I would hope not. Jeez.
I literally would have decision makers from companies. I'd call and get through to the decision maker, and they'd say, no thanks. If I want to buy cocaine, I'll go somewhere else, and they'd hang up on me. So brutal. It was really a tough sell. But it made me better as a salesperson in the long run. The other lesson I learned from Pittsburgh is later when I went to the Mariners at the time, and being young, being in my 20s, you know, you look at things and you often look at things and think they could be better. We could do this better. We don't do this well. We don't do this well. But then as your career grows and you work other places, I went to Seattle and realized, wow, the Pirates do more things well than I thought. You know, when you don't have a team to compare it to, you think of what might not be as good as it could be, especially when you're in your 20s. Then you become more mature in general, and then more opportunities. You get to compare things to one another, and you realize some things aren't as bad as you might have thought early on. That was another lesson that came from Pittsburgh as well.
So, you know, Mike, as I'm listening to you speak as a sports fan myself, I'm a guy who has a story that says, I think every sports fan in the world, if they ever got into sales, they would love to sell for their favorite team. And I think me being in Toronto, I'm a diehard Toronto Maple Leafs fan with hockey and the Raptors. And so if I ever did any other type of selling, I would want to work. I'd work there for free, just to go to the games and just to kind of be around that environment, et cetera, et cetera. And so I imagine for you at the time as well, being a Pirates fan and being a local Pennsylvania kid, that must have been pretty cool. And then of course you go to Seattle. And so you're selling in the sports world. And so talk to me about, you know, what your decision was to actually jump out on your own, because I know you did that for years.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Charlie Chislagi. He also was the key person getting a contract to run an inside sales department for the Cleveland Indians in the 90s when they were just building what we're calling Jacobs Field at the time, now Progressive Field, I believe.
The Jake.
Yeah, there's the fun thing about working in sports is once you have success, people will want to work with you, whether it's building a new venue, whether it's a sales staff that is struggling, but sales in general is fun. Once you know how to sell a product, once you know great technique, Paul, you can apply that to almost any sales situation. So being able to apply it in sports has been a dream come true for me, no doubt. And you talk about the Leafs. And just a few years ago, I was in Toronto training the staff for the Argonauts and was able to go to a Leafs game. And the Hockey Hall of Fame in town is just what a wonderful place that is to visit as a sports fan, hockey fan or not, just a fan. It's so well done. When you work in sports, the fun thing is, as I mentioned, the relationships. You get to meet people that would love to do what you just said, Paul. You know, they have a seeming seemingly jealous approach to what you do. But as I tell a lot of people in the recruiting process, you know, when we're hiring new people, the thing about working in sports is a lot of people don't know that it's work. They emphasize the sports part, but they don't think about the work part. So if you want to work in sports, you're not going to see much of the game. You're not. You're going to be seeing your fans and their enjoyment of the game. You're going to make sure things are going well for any groups or premium seating customers that you have. You don't see a lot of the game when you work in sports. So that's surprising and maybe disappointing to some of the candidates that want to get into the industry, but it's a lot more work than it is sports, but it's still,
all right,
and it's still fun.
So your entrepreneurial bug, where'd that come from?
Probably from a desire to get out of my hometown. I knew the opportunities there were going to be limited. I worked in sports and also in radio, disc jockeying, local rock radio stations in Pittsburgh and Johnstown. And I knew that what I wanted to do, and I didn't have the bullseye wasn't clear, but I knew where the dartboard was. So I knew that that dartboard wasn't in Western Pennsylvania. I knew that it was going to require some travel, which I always wanted to do anyway. So I think it was less industry motivated, more just wanting to see the world motivated. And it worked. It's not a blueprint for success that I would recommend to others not going to college and, not having that specific target in mind. And I know how fortunate I am, Paul. We all are, but I realize what a lucky man I am. It's worked out somehow.
All right.
I think more than anything, the reason it's worked out was my work ethic. So as much as I wanted to get out of my hometown, and I mentioned my father earlier, which is where I got my work ethic instilled in me, if it wasn't for that, there's no way I'd have success. And I see that, you know, it's like the book title, talent is overrated. I see that a lot in recruiting 4 new sales consultants. When we post a job, and because it is sports, we get a lot of candidates. And I talk to people about what they want to accomplish. And I can't tell you how important it is for me to hear from someone that wants to work in the industry what they want to do and have it sound, have a plan that sounds realistic. Because if someone says, I want to be an athletic director, I'll always ask them, what do you believe an athletic director's responsibilities are? Because I want to get a feel for if they're just throwing out a title or if they have a plan. So back to your question, yeah, I was fortunate. I was motivated to get out of town, but I always remember my hometown is still part of me and I'm proud of that.
Okay, so that's fair. And I appreciate your clarity on that. So let's fast forward a little bit here, because I know you were self-employed for a long time. And when you were self-employed, did you have your own ticket selling business? Is that what you were doing? Or were you working as a consultant for teams?
A consultant for teams. Yeah.
Okay.
And the challenge with that is you are making money sometimes and sometimes you're not. You know, entrepreneurship is a great ambition, but it has to have a business plan that goes with it, because there are going to be some times when you're feasting and there's some times where it's a famine.
Okay. So now I know that you worked at Arizona State University mm-hmm. for a better part of 5 or 6 years, give or take. Mm-hmm. If we fast forward to the mid-2000s, how did that happen? Did they find you? Did you raise your hand? What was that like in terms of the initial conversations with them?
To answer it from a 30,000 foot angle first, Paul, I typically don't go out looking for work. I tell this to a lot of people that are earlier in their careers. You know, when somebody is looking for the next thing, they usually always are looking. And you never really do your best work when you've got one eye somewhere else. I find that the best opportunities are the ones that come to us. So put your head down, do the work you need to do to be successful in the current role that you have, and let opportunities find you. Specific to your question, prior to Arizona State, I was senior director of customer service and retention for here in Atlanta for the Hawks of the NBA and the Thrashers, the old NHL team. And it was a grind. And I knew the first year was going to be a grind and a lot of 70 and 80 hour work weeks. The second year ended up being the same thing. So an opportunity knocked on the door for Arizona State. And I said, I'm not interested. Thank you. It's very kind of you, but no. And a few weeks later, they came back and knocked again. And whether I was having an extremely challenging day or not, I'm not sure by memory, but for whatever reason, I said, well, let's talk. So that's another good lesson in sales, right? Never take that first no and walk away forever. There's always an opportunity to come back. So I looked at it, went to Arizona State, and for really quality of life purposes, I had just had 2 really grinding years in Atlanta with the Hawks and the Thrashers. Prior to that, I had 2 very grinding years in the D League, the G League, but the D League of the NBA, as team president of a D League team. And that was a grind. So I had 4 straight years of 70 to 80 hours a week. And the quality of life really was important to me at that time. So I went to Arizona State, Tempe, Arizona, fell in love with the area, beautiful, and created the Sales Academy. This is where we hired almost all students at Arizona State, not all, but practically all students, to work part-time around their class schedule to sell season tickets for Sun Devil Athletics. We had an office in the basement of the basketball arena, Wells Fargo Arena, and it was a wonderful experience. And you're recruiting students. Sometimes you get extremely unqualified graduates, but when you're hiring students, I remember walking into a lobby where we were about to host a group interview, and there are a number of students in the lobby, and I'm talking to the group, and there's one young gentleman sitting there, and he had what I thought was paint on his sandals. So I asked him if he was painting. He looked down at his foot and said, oh no, that's toothpaste. So he didn't get hired. But there's a lot of turnover because they're young and they don't really know what they want, which is, you know, how we were when we were their age. But some great success stories came from that, not just the amount of money that we sold in tickets, but a dozen or so students went to work in the sport industry after graduation. And two of them are now vice presidents. My gosh, you got Ryan Miller, vice president of ticket sales and service for the LA Kings. Andre Luck, who's vice president of ticket sales and service for the Miami Marlins. And they came from that basement in Wells Fargo Arena. They had an opportunity. They made the most of it. So we sold very well, and it was a blast. Really enjoyed being at Arizona State.
Your decision to go out west, were you married at the time? And if you were, your wife's approval of this, how did that factor into the equation?
Not married at the time. So okay. My wife, Jamie, was not in my life at that time. So moving out west was an easier decision. Although ironically, we realized later when we connected that we were both in the state of Arizona around the same time, but we didn't meet out there.
Okay. And how long were you with ASU?
ASU must have been 6 or so years, as you
about
said.
5 or 6 years. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that'll take us to 2011.
Yeah.
Give or take. Yeah. All right.
2011, I decided to leave Arizona State when the economy really started to go down. I wanted something new. And Jerry Colangelo, the former owner of the Phoenix Suns and the Diamondbacks, he and his business partners own some golf courses in the Phoenix area. So I thought I would be able to sell golf memberships and golf outings, group outings to their courses. But as I said, the economy was so bad. It was a failure. I was meeting with millionaires, frankly, that were just uncomfortable writing a $5,000 check. Right. That's how uncomfortable they were with the economy. So my former boss in Atlanta, Bernie Mullen, who I'd worked with off and on the last 35 years, has been a great friend, mentor. And he called when I was living in Tempe and needing an opportunity. He said, well, we've got through the Aspire Group, a partnership at New Mexico State University. And the timing of it was perfect. So it was a 5-hour drive from Tempe. So I lived in Las Cruces, New Mexico, would come back to my home in Tempe roughly on a weekend once a month. But that is what got me back full time into the Aspire Group. So living in Arizona was wonderful, miss it very much. And it came at a time in my life where I needed Arizona. But there was an opportunity knocking with the Aspire Group, and thankfully it's brought me back to Atlanta.
And so did you meet Jamie in Atlanta?
No, that's a funny story. We went to high school together.
Oh.
And disconnected for 30 some years. And through the power of Facebook and social media, reconnected. Yeah. And I was visiting family one Christmas and asked if she would, you know, want to get together for lunch. And we did connect, and boom, like that. It was perfect. It was easy. It was perfect. And I can't say love at first sight because we saw each other in high school, but it was a wonderful connection, and very happy to have her as my wife, my partner. And here we are in Atlanta, happily ever after.
So let's chat about where you are current state right now. And so, you know, as I shared with you before I hit record, I was anticipating a conversation with you about 2020 a little bit, but that it would be a lot of taking on water this year. It would be a really bad year just based on my understanding of the Aspire Group. And I'm thrilled to hear that while, yes, you acknowledge that there have been some changes as we've all had to pivot and adjust, and some better or worse. Talk to me about 2020 professionally and personally, Mike. How have you navigated these, you know, choppy waters for the last 7-8 months?
Well, professionally, working in athletics with a lot of collegiate athletic departments as our partners, a lot less money coming in. Ticket sales is at best restricted, you know, because of capacity restrictions. So there's a lot less money coming in to these athletic departments, but the increase in their expenses has been extraordinary. it would have been high anyway because of the lack of revenue coming in. But, you know, the NCAA approved scholarships being extended. So they have more scholarships to pay for than they anticipated when they put their budget together. COVID testing has been a huge expense, which was not in the budget when they put the budget together. So those are just two examples. So skyrocketing expenses, and how do you pay for them when the revenue is not coming in through tickets? We've become much more mission critical to our partners simply because we know how to drive revenue through development, donations, in other words, because we emphasize relationship building so much. So if you're a natural relationship builder, which is going to help you gain the trust of your customers, asking for something that doesn't have a tangible return, a tangible product attached to it, which is what a donation really is, can still be done. So we've had success with many of our partners through development, through fundraising, that frankly, it had been a trajectory of ours the last few years, 5 years or more. We've had more and more of our partners lean on us for help with development. But this year, especially, Paul, because of the critical need, many more partners have come to us with that need. So yes, we have been able to stay afloat in part because of the pivot, not just selling tickets, which is certainly still a core responsibility at many of our properties across the country, but the ability to increase drive revenue through development's been really a godsend for us too.
Awesome. That's on the professional side. I'm so thrilled to hear that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about personally, man.
You know, personally, I mentioned Jamie, we got married this year. We got married in a pandemic. So we had a Teams meeting marriage. So we were married by a dear friend, Chad Cardinal, who's an employee of the Aspire Group. He is in California. So I popped the question to Jamie, and it was elation. You know, we were thrilled. It was the third anniversary of Jamie moving to Atlanta. It was the 41st month of us being together. So the 26th of each month is a celebration for us because our first date was on December 26th. She moved to Atlanta. The date was May 26th. So on May 26th, asked her to marry me. And she said yes, thankfully. And then in the conversation, I asked, well, when do you want to get married? And she had given that no thought, obviously. And then I asked, well, what about tonight? And she didn't know what to think. Little did she know, Chad and I had been working behind the scenes. Chad for us became ordained. So we went to a virtual conference, and from California, Chad married us. And it's one of the highlights of my life. And it's interesting because it happened during what is such a dark time in the world. So regardless of the challenges, I believe regardless of the challenges that are going around anywhere and at any time, there is some good that can come from it. And that's just one example. And Paul, when we're reaching out to our friends and telling them the news, not only were they thrilled for us, but they, and again, this was May. So the pandemic was still not new, but it wasn't 7 months old new. They were so happy for us, but they were just happy to get some good news. Really sensed that from so many people that they said, this is the best news I've had in months. So it's not why we did it, but I'm glad that so many people got some joy out of our happiness too.
Well, that's so cool to hear because, you know, it's one thing for you to propose and then, you know, so you're going through a pandemic that we're all going through. Probably on the surface, it might have been, well, then how do we get married and when? Because you can't really do this right now. Nothing's open. And you're, to your point in May, you know, not that we're much further along right now, but it was a lot scarier even back in May. We didn't know much. April was worse. And so I'm sure you're like, okay, how do we do this? And I love the intention of, well, let's go. Let's just do it tonight. Okay. We love each other. Let's create this. And so that you guys got married online. I love it.
It goes to show that when you want something, there's a way to make it happen. As salespeople, we have to become naturally good problem solvers. You know, we have to resolve objections. anybody can take a yes. I mentioned the name Bernie Mullen earlier, and I love his quote, Paul, selling begins when the other person says no. So there were challenges, there were obstacles, but I remember the Henry Ford quote, an obstacle is what you see when you take your eyes off your goal. Just focus on what you want to accomplish and don't worry about the things you're going to make it more difficult, because those will make it more difficult.
I love it. Mike, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I really am glad we allocated the time here. It took a while to get us on the books here, but I'm glad that it happened here. Fascinating life that you've had thus far. I always like to ask anybody who's a guest on the podcast, if you had one piece of advice or feedback or something that you would want to share that maybe has worked for you, kind of your foundation, anything come to mind?
Probably two things, Paul, maybe five by the time I'm done, but I'll start with a couple. One is, when I was a sales consultant, I knew I wasn't the smartest person in the room. I knew I may not be the most talented, but I always told myself, I'll be darned if anybody in this department is going to outwork me. And that's something I could control. And it sounds cliche, I understand, but it works. What are you going to be known for? And I've been, my gosh, I remember going to Rutgers years ago, and I was inheriting a staff at the time. I was the new boss. And eventually people would come to me and say, I think I should be promoted. And I said, okay, well, sure. Tell me why. And inevitably, it came down to, I've been here a while. Mm-hmm. That staff was really roughly doing about the same amount of work and having roughly about the same amount of success as everybody else. And if that's the case in your department, if no one is differentiating themselves, if no one is really standing out, well, how could you possibly get promoted, right? So always outwork everybody. The sales will come. Don't focus on the sales when you first get there. Work on your productivity, work on the effort, and be known for that. Because with good sales technique, the sales will come to you. So work hard, work hard. That comes to mind. On my social media profiles, I posted a video just a week or so ago on the second thing that comes to mind, Paul. And it probably came to me watching an interview with Jerry Seinfeld and President Obama, of all people.
Comedian in cars?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was not a whole lot in cars in that episode, but it was at the White House. And they're having coffee in the cafe. And President Obama is talking to Jerry about the success that he had with the show Seinfeld and why he's still doing stand-up. And Jerry said, because, you know, he had the success. He had more money. As he told President Obama at the time, I got more money than you. But he said that I fell in love with the work. I fell in love with the work. And that's why I do stand up now. Do I need to? No, but I fell in love with the work. So the video I was talking about a moment ago, Paul, I talked about, don't just have an ambition, a drive for the title, whatever title you want in your career, but have that same approach to the work itself. The work is going to define, the results will define your success, but the work is how you're going to get there. So outwork everybody, fall in love with the work. Don't go chasing a title. Let the opportunities come to you. Because I said it before, but I believe this so strongly. You know, when opportunities come to us, Paul, I find that they're typically better opportunities. If we go looking for something, we'll find something. But is that something that's going to sustain us? You know, a lot of people change careers, a lot of people change jobs, but if that is a habitual approach on your resume, at some point somebody's going to say, wait, I mean, this might be a talented person, but how long are they going to be here, right?
Right. You know, Mike, I so appreciate the time here. You know what, I lied. Last question for you, you know, for a guy who's been in sports for, you know, a lifetime, in a number of different capacities, what's your take on how the sports industry did this year? With the NBA in the bubble, the NFL doing what they're doing right now, the hockey, Toronto and Edmonton had their two bubbles. And what's the other one? Major League Baseball, you know, they did the World Series, I think, in a centralized, was it outside of Dallas as well? And so what's your take on their attempt to somewhat complete it and still give us an outlet, which we all needed, I think, which was sports?
I think they did well given the circumstances, Paul. I mean, this is something that we've never experienced in our lives. And to bring people together, to give them something to root for, I feel is what motivated them. Yeah, they wanted the TV revenue. Absolutely. We understand that. There are big bills to pay. And, you know, Major League Baseball, just this week, Commissioner Manfred talking about the amount of debt that Major League Baseball has. So I understand the motivation may have been in some cases revenue driven. We understand that, but it gave fans something to cheer for. It gave fans something that felt normal. It felt normal. I'm glad they did it. How well did they do it? Anybody can try to poke holes in it, but that's easy from a fan seat. When you're the one putting that plan together, it's a lot more difficult. So my take on how sports is done this year, I think, is generally good. I think that some of the approaches that the NFL's taken with social justice is late, but I think that at least they're in the right direction. I hope that they are. So there's some really good that's come from it this year. There's some things they could have done better, but if all you look for are things that could have been done better, you're never going to appreciate the things that are done well. So we do live in a society where looking for fault seems to be almost a standard. And that's a shame because it's a lot easier to find fault when you're not the person responsible for those decisions. So I try not to be too critical, but, you know, I won't give them a grade, but I think in general sports did well this year. Could they have done better in some areas? Sure. But they probably did better than what you and I would have done if it was our decisions to make, because they were tough decisions, Paul.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And to your point, I've always felt it's so much easier to be the opposition.
Yeah,
and just kind of poke holes and stuff. So Mike Boswell, thanks so much for freeing up the time, man. It's been great speaking with you.
Paul, thanks for having me. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, let's wrap this one up right now. Thanks for being here. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. And be safe, everybody.